Hello, and welcome to a very special episode of The Notorious Scoundrels. My name is Evan Dagvila-Paul. I am here with Mike Berry. Say hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Ah, you did it. Okay. Anyway, we're going to move on. We don't have a ton of time to be wasting on us, on the two of us talking, because I think most of y'all are going to be here to hear these two other folks talking. But before we get there, I want to say super quickly thank you to our patrons. And I do have some shout outs: Kevin Buchanan, Justin Harris, Antonio Gonzalez. Thank you all very much for your support. We appreciate it. And we are always going to be keeping our ears open for how we can be doing better. Okay, that is all of that. We're going to get on to the good stuff. So we are here with, for the first time on Notorious Scoundrels, we have Will Schick and Will Pagani from Atomic Mass Games. I hope that I got this right by doing a little bit of research, is that Will Schick is the VP of Creative Development and Strategy, and Will Pagani is the Development Director. Is that right, guys?
You got both the new titles like spot on. I think you do better than we normally do.
I was going to say, I feel like every time I hear you introduced Schick, like the title is very different.
Yeah, I mean, mostly because I can't remember the damn title. The actuality is that I was head of product development for so long, and then it swapped because we did some studio rearranging and we had like Pagani step into being a director and things like that.
Yeah.
And so it's just a mouthful of a title, and I can never remember it quite right. I have to remember country song and dance, and that kind of walks me through most of it, but it's not quite right because it's CDS. It doesn't matter. This is pointless. I'm wasting time. Let's move
on. That is not a mnemonic I'm familiar with, but yeah, I may ask you sometime about how that actually goes if you're using country song and dance. I do want to ask really quickly, so like in terms of what that means you guys do, is this like a Emperor and Vader situation, or is it more of a Boss Nass and Jar Jar situation?
Oh my. Well, I'm definitely the Jar Jar situation. There's no doubt about it. I mostly stumble around and cause chaos that turns out into positive, like mostly positive outcomes. Our roles are effectively the same as they've always been within the studio. We just happen to have more fine folks and talented people reporting to us and working with us. So the managerial role has grown, right?
Yeah.
In terms of just kind of what we're covering and everything. Like Pagani is overseeing a larger team now between everything. And of course, the overall product development team has grown immensely. And so we've just been we did a big reorg last year where effectively a lot of folks got appropriate titles to the amount of manager like oversight and employee work they were doing.
Yeah.
But at the core of it, I still oversee all of the product vision for the studio in terms of what's coming out for the games, what we're trying to work with, working closely with our licensors to inform them of that, as well as Asmodee. And then bringing all of the different talents together to kind of create hopefully a cohesive and final product that goes on the shelves and everyone gets to pick up and play with and have a great time. Do you want to talk about what you do, Pagani?
Sure. I'm a cat wrangler. This is my personal favorite. I basically keep all the devs on track because they're a very excitable bunch and they love to make things and they love to do all sorts of cool stuff. And somebody has to make sure that the things that they make turn into products and things like that. And are following the direction and design documents put forth by the studio. So I work on all the different games, not just Star Wars Legion. And I work very closely with all the different developers. And usually when it comes to me actually developing things, it is somebody runs into a problem or they have an issue or they're stuck on something. And then myself will get pulled in. And then Schick will also get pulled in if it gets big enough and exciting enough.
So. We'll dust off the fun times we used to have when we actually made the things directly, and then we'll go back in and be like, all right, this is how you do it, youngins.
But I like to explain it to people that ask what I do is like, I give ideas and then tell them to go do it. And then I say, no, not like that. So,
I mean, that sounds like what a director does. So yeah, it makes sense.
It's a lot of fun.
All right. Well, we appreciate the explanations and we appreciate you guys being here. I know that, you guys don't have to do this. Not all game devs do this in terms of like having it, like providing an opportunity to just like reach out directly to people that are making content. I still don't like that word, but making stuff that people watch and listen to. And that, but we really appreciate it. It's a way that those of us who some listeners may be shocked to find out that Mike and I are not game developers. And so it is good to sort of like have a little bit of a reality check, in my opinion. You know, like all sorts of folks can be either us making the podcast or people listening can have any range of opinions about like why things are done, what motives are, stuff like that. But it's best to just hear it from the source, and we appreciate you being willing to put yourself out there. So, on that note, I'd actually like to start by drawing an enormously huge conclusion from one pre-release announcement, if that's all right.
Let's go. This sounds like what we came for.
Let's do
Exactly.
it.
So we've seen a few new a few of the new boxes of Legion, like the two that have come out, and then also the pre-release announcement for the Geonosians. And there is a little bit of a trend that we're seeing is that putting the Aqua Droids aside, because that's not really a relevant one, but for the Crab Droids, we got the two Crabs in one unit box. For the Geonosians, is that we have I believe 11 minis as the two heavies, and then the leader and eight regular Geonosian bug dudes. And it seems to us is that we're starting to see a little bit of a pattern. It's one where so far, like the situation is that it seems like there's more stuff in one box, which when you sort of like get out there with the calculators and stuff like that, is that it does look like it's less sort of cash per mini in terms of like real money dollars compared to how things were in the legacy set. That said, is that there's other situations to where it is a little bit more expensive, at least because there are more minis in there. And that if you're trying to, for instance, buy like six units of Geonosians, is that it is going to be a little bit of a higher cost. And so there's obviously like give and take whenever you do these things. But I was wondering if you could comment on sort of what the new vision of boxing strategy is for the new version of Legion.
Sure. So, I mean, I think realistically, right, the boxing strategy is the same as it always has been. It's just we have bigger units now. So, like, if you think about like old Legion, or like, yeah, like old Legion boxes, right? When before the big units became a thing, they would have all of your options. They'd have your extra personnel guy if you could get one, right? Your extra trooper. They'd have all of the heavy options that you could have. And so there were always extra miniatures in there, but the value of that is that unlike, in other games, and I'm sure that this was discussed in that determination that we're going to give all of the options. Every option that a unit can take is going to be in that box, outside of the things that were added later, like the upgrade packs and the specialist packs, right? But from a core base unit perspective, you've always purchased or picked up the box, right? And you've had all of the things that can build out with that unit. And that does mean that you wind up with some extras. So really, this is just an evolution of saying, okay, then there now that we have Geonosians as a potentially 10 trooper squad, or rebel troopers or stormtroopers, right? All these units that can take multiple things. It's just simply, okay, well, let's make sure that we're providing the full options and opportunity in that box. And there's a lot of reasons that that really makes sense from both a logistical and a manufacturing side, from a player side, from a store side, right? So there's the thing that says you mentioned that now if I want to get the big squads, great, they're cheaper per mini, right? If you break down the math, we've been able to offer more miniatures for less dollars per mini, right? Because I think the Geonosians went up by $10. They used to be 40, now they're 50. And one of the big challenges that we have as the studio and looking at the game and everything else is to make sure that value's there. Talk about value a lot. Value to a player. How are we making sure that, all of that is being portrayed in a way that makes the whatever the unit box or the thing that you're picking up, like, have value to you, feels like you're getting a deal, making sure that it works within the game and then works all along the value chain line. And so it's not only important that when a new player, especially because we always want to think about new players, right? The way these games grow and become bigger and succeed and go forward into the future, it's incumbent upon the veteran player base to continue to be engaged and to be good stewards of the game and to be there for those people, right? They're the foundation that holds everything together. But we all know, if you've ever been a part of any lifestyle game, that new players is where it's at, right? Bringing in new players and having them have a great experience is how the game gets to that next level.
Absolutely.
And so from that vantage point, right, it's like, okay, as a new player, we want to remove barriers. So you don't want to have a player walk in and be like, okay, I'm going to get this box of Geonosians. Oh, but I need 10 of them. So now what do I do? There's only six of them or seven of them in here, right? And from a retailer standpoint, that's also complex because retailers are dealing with 15, 2,500 products a year, whatever the crazy number is now. It's gone up like every year because of Kickstarter and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I saw a study once that said it was 5,000. I was like, I don't believe that's true, but it's a lot, right? And so if you're just an LGS owner and you have maybe a couple of staff, you're not going to know everything. So when that player says, what do I need to play this game? You're going to be like, those boxes there, right? Unless you happen to be super engaged with the game yourself. And the reality is you just can't expect that to be the case for like all of these different games. So again, it's how do you convey information and make sure that the product is easy to stock, easy to sell, easy as a player to pick up to know what's going on. Now that does lead to a situation where, say, if you want to run min units, you might wind up with a lot of extras.
Yeah.
But I think the reality is that this game is a hobby game. So if you want to do that, right, it's not super difficult. And we do a lot of different hobby content. We're going to grow a lot of that too, to say, hey, just do a couple of cuts or do a repositioning of an arm or just do a different paint style on this guy's shoulder or do some fancy wings if you're a Geonosian and say, that's my leader,
As
right?
long
Because
as
the
it looks like a
rules,
leader, as long as
yeah,
you can
because
tell it's a leader.
the rules simply state the leader has to be identifiable. Now, we create a leader miniature, but there's nothing in a hobby game that says you have to use that leader as long as it doesn't cause game confusion, right? So there are ways to get even more value out of that box if you want it. And you know, there's also like going to cost savings and all this stuff to think about. The product is now multilingual, which means that you're going to get all the different language cards in there. So if you're buying two min units, you're going to wind up with double the amount of cards, which is quadruple the amount of cards, right? All of those things have a cost. That's kind of how those different MSRPs get calculated, because you think about, you know, we're a studio of 36 people, we're making these products, then we're just making the files, right? They go to our producer, Asmodee, who publishes everything. That's a global corporation. There's a staff that works on them from that to get them all produced and everything. So like everybody at every step needs to be able to make enough to make something out of it. And then you get to the retailer and you get to everything else, right? So there's a huge amount of people who need their quote unquote cut, which is kind of a not a nice way to say it, and I don't mean it that way, but it kind of gets the point across, right? And then every piece of material that goes in those boxes also has a cost, and then there's a warehousing cost and all this stuff. So at the end of the day, right, what we've done is worked extremely hard to find the perfect little like balance point of value at all levels. And then finding that point at a place where it's like, okay, this game is still accessible. Because at the end of the day, and going back to those new players, right, making sure that these products don't break the bank, that they do offer a lot of value for what's in them, and that, you know, you feel like, hey, I can join this hobby and I can get a full army and I'm not going to have to take out a second mortgage to do so, you know, and I'm going to be able to grow with the game after I get into that initial, you know, I get my initial army gun. Now I can just pick things up as they come along and all of that stuff. So that was kind of really the thing in the end, was it very nicely fit into how Legion had always been done. There are a lot of great reasons for why Legion was initially packaged that way in terms of its offering you the full unit value. And then there's, you know, the situation where we are now with bigger units. Let's make sure everybody has that stuff. And I know, because I listened to you all, that there are some concerns about the fact that, hey, Geonosians are great as a big unit, but these other units aren't. And therefore, I would want min units instead of max units. So now I'm getting grifted for $10 because I'm going to get more stuff, right?
Somebody's been listening to me talk. I don't know. I
Yeah.
don't
I
know.
don't know. I don't know if some of you heard our Super Squad episode,
And
maybe.
so you can look at it that way, right?
Sure.
You can also say, hey, just hobby the extra leader and you've
Yeah.
got the thing. And then
Yeah.
you tell me, but I need this one heavy. And I'd say, well, hobby that too, right? Or maybe try some different stuff. But the other thing that I would say, and I think this is also important, is to remember that these are living, evolving games. So
Yeah.
just because, say, Rebel Troopers are not great as a big squad right now, doesn't mean that in 2 years, Rebel
Yeah.
Troopers as a big squad isn't going to be like
They
the
may
end
be in
all
the
be all
future.
for the
Yeah,
game.
exactly. Yeah.
Either through a point adjustment or rebalance or just a
Sure.
new unit or new missions that come out. Which means that if we only gave you min units and everybody just picked up the min unit, in 2 years you'd be like, I have to go buy more of them. Like, I wish they just gave me the full unit because they're good, right? And this
Sure.
comes back to the fact that having all the options in the box not only means that it's the lowest cost for the players in terms of just purchasing those units. It also means that when that day comes and these things that maybe are not the most efficient things now are efficient later, they're just sitting there ready to go for you and you don't have to do anything else to like make it work, right? So I think there's that too. There's just we want players to be equipped with everything that they could need
Yeah.
in terms of the game going forward because we know the game is a shifting environment. And just because something is true today doesn't mean that it's going to be true tomorrow in terms of the play or the meta.
That's
And
totally
that's the other
fair.
thing, right?
And because like when 2.6 was first revealed, is that I think that there was a little bit of a mad rush to stores to like buy B2 boxes for all the people who wanted to do the super squads, and I think that that probably accelerated the sellout situation. But is that, that was with boxes that you didn't have any control of. They existed before AMG even had the game. But now, with it makes sense to me is that you have like boxes that have everything. You're basically pre-planning. This is as big as this unit is ever going to be. It's going to have all the minis. And for what it's worth, is that into the rules that there is like built in this thing of the miniature needs to be 50% or more of like the original stuff. But if you're just talking about a pointing arm, that's less than 50%, right? If that's what you're going to model. And so that
Or even
seems
just a
really
painted
doable.
shoulder pad, right?
Yeah,
Like,
yeah, yeah.
and
You
I
don't have
mean,
to
it
do
doesn't
anything
even have to
crazy.
look like the
Yeah.
original one. It could be whatever you want. Again, I think that there's lots of opportunities and options there. And even if you don't, you're convinced you'll never use the full squad. There's lots of
Sure.
ways to utilize those miniatures in different ways and make it work. And then hopefully, by the end of it, we'll see that value come through and the game will be very accessible and people will kind of just accept it as the normal way that squads are sold. I know we're in this weird transition time where that happens. The other
Sure.
thing to point out, just talking about we don't know what the future holds, is that we came in relatively conservative on the big squads, right? We've costed them the way we did. We did a lot of testing. Pagani can talk about this, I'm sure, but there were a lot of, it wasn't like we were just like, this will be fine, it'll be great. We went through 2.5 years of testing trying to get big squads to
Yeah.
kind of be functional and to expand the scope of the game and everything else. And there were a lot of different ways that we tried. But even at the end of it, when we were there, it was like, okay, we're introducing a pretty big variable into a fairly stable ecosystem
Yeah.
with a lot of other variables too, right? It's not just like squads became bigger, a lot of stuff changed. So let's just be a little conservative, knowing that again, these games are living. We can make slight adjustments. We can, tweak points if we have to or do bigger rebalances if we need to. And the primary goal, as we said in that initial stream at Ministrav, is that we want to see Legion grow into this really true army scale game. And big units, I think, are a huge part of that, right? Like visually seeing 1,000 points on the table, seeing large squads
Sure.
is what takes you to that next level and says, oh, yes, this is a mass army game that hopefully plays faster than some of the ones that are out there that people might have participated in. And that's kind of the balance, right? Is making sure the game still plays as quick as it did, but also increase the scope, increase the scale, increase the excitement around the game so that we can really feel like we're playing Star Wars Legion. And so again, it's not like we're abandoning or planning to or have any intention to suddenly be like, oh, well, those big units didn't work out. Let's back away from them. They are, in many ways, the future of the game. So much so that we have a product that's going to get announced at Adepticon to give a slight spoiler during the keynote, which I'm not going to tell you what it is. But that
That's
unit's been
fine.
sitting on the shelf done. You can guess afterwards which one it was. But we've had that unit done for almost 2 years now, and we couldn't release it because we originally were going to release it as the first big squad in Legion, and it didn't work.
Interesting.
And we only came to that ultimate determination by the time that everything was kind of off to the factory and everything, and we're like, well, I guess we eat this one. But eventually everything worked out, and now people are going to get their hands on this unit, and it's pretty fun and exciting. But that's how long this has been an intention and a desire in us to be able to kind of expand the scope of the game. So
And Mike, the gifts just keep on giving. It's like they've already given us something to like theorize about on the next episode.
hey, I'm
But
just
we're already like an episode and a half now at this point.
yeah, Shick, you jumped in front of that question before I could even ask it. I was
I
ready and raring to go. I'm like, let's talk about Super Squads then. I think that that's really, really great to hear. I definitely I think the Super Squads are really cool, and I would definitely like to see them more on the table. So it's good to hear you guys are kind of looking into ways in the future to make that happen more often.
And Pagani, feel free to like, if you wanted to like anything more about sort of what the balancing process was like, because I think that if you guys were aiming at sort of a conservative approach, I think that you actually did hit that, because we ended up in a situation to where I think some of the super squads are seeing like a healthy amount of play, but they're not like everywhere. And then some of them are seeing like in the lower end. And so if you're trying to be conservative, I think you actually nailed it. But I'm curious about what were the iterations you went through.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when we first introduced them, we had not made the changes to cover.
Yeah.
And then they were just like
Oh, wow.
wildly overpowered,
Oh
right?
boy,
Like
that they would be so
they were
good.
insane.
Mega good.
So
Yeah.
like now you remember the dice pools, like 14 black dice. It's just like, oh my God, this is the best thing in the game, like
Yeah.
easily.
Who cares about cover?
There's just nothing can even live through this. It's everything's dead. It's horrible. And that was kind of this unit that Shake's talking about here.
Which,
And
to be clear, when you see it, you'll be like, that unit shouldn't be scary at all. Like,
yeah,
not to
no.
that level of scary.
Sure.
So like they went through everything from like, how do we make this not broken? How do we make this okay?
Yeah.
Wow, this is terrible. Oh my God, can we do non-surging white attack dice? Like it was a whole thing. Like, can we make this upgrade change what the other guys are gonna roll? And just
Yeah.
it was a whole thing. That went through, as Chick said, probably like at least 2 years of iteration. From this is incredible to this is literally unplayable. Why would you ever do this? To where we are now, which we were trying to be conservative, right? Because we never want to release something and just have that be the only thing that anyone plays, right? We want things to be options. We want them to have pros and cons. We talked a lot about like, I mean, by the end of it, right? It was a lot of like, well, you get less activations, which we know is not great in Legion. Legion wants a lot of activations because order of operations are important, waiting till the end, all that kind of good stuff that you guys talk about all the time. But it also gives you sort of front-loaded activations where you can like activate essentially two squads at once and that kind of stuff. So like there were benefits to this as we changed the mission systems, the activation counts became less important. Maybe that was okay. So there were so many variables that went into these big squads. And with the goal of please don't make them the only thing to take because we want players to have options. Honestly, I think they came out about where we wanted them to. And then the ones that are less popular, we can tweak points on, hopefully, to make them more of an option.
Yeah, if B2 super squads were like early ARC Troopers level good, then it would have been an issue, because
For sure.
the game would have like devolved into sort of a class system. It's like, do you have B2s? Oh, I'm sorry, you're not able
For
to play.
shame. All
I think
right. There's one thing that I also want to touch on that Shake mentioned very, very briefly about the big
Sure.
squad boxes, and
Yeah.
the units being inside the boxes is I ran a game store for 10 years, and a huge one for me is like ease of stocking things, is why I like these boxes, right? Because if we said, hey, we're not gonna make this, we're just gonna sell you the leader, three or four troops, and a heavy weapon, cool. Now you gotta buy two of those boxes. But if we only give you three guys, because we don't want you, like, we take away the personnel upgrade or something, right? Cool. Now you can't just buy two of those boxes. Now you have to buy three of those boxes to get all the troopers without the heavy weapon. So it just becomes this whole mess. Maybe we have to make another product that's just five troopers. Nobody wants that. So it's just really easy for people that don't understand Legion to stock the game. If it's cool, hello, sir, I would like one Genosian. And they're like, great. Here is your Genosian. Like, you don't have three different products that somebody has to look at to buy one squad of Genosians or whatever, right?
That,
which
that's a
is
really good point because, like, anybody who's spent enough time around game stores knows that, like, the level of familiarity, between game store owners and
absolutely.
managers is like pretty variable.
Yeah.
And so, like, the less guesswork, the better.
It just depends which game, the
Yeah.
different folks
Yeah.
on the staff like, right? The other
Yeah.
thing too is that, the more you spread it out, the more you have stocking issues. So
Yeah.
now all of a sudden one of the boxes that you need is out, but the other one is in, and now you either have dead
Now you
stock
can't
at the
sell that.
retailer
Yeah.
level, or you just wind up, and a lot of these lessons we have learned, Pagani and I, through our time in the industry and working on various miniatures games and also working in retail stores. He owned one, I worked at one for my entire high school career. It's like we're always, we want the games to be great and we want people to love playing them, but we also try very hard at Atomic Mass and in our discussions to approach it from, we also remember trying to sell these products, right? And to support communities in our store and all of the insane things that go into that. And anywhere time we can reduce some of that complexity and just make it so that it will be successful in your store. If you stock it, they will come. That all the better, right? So there's that part to it too.
Have you guys heard? I'm just really quickly, I'm curious. Have you maybe by any chance heard from any game stores in like Eastern Canada or Switzerland where they were trying to figure out how many, French versus English versus German kits do they have to keep together, and now they don't have to do that anymore?
No,
That sounds like a
so
nightmare.
I've seen some positive discourse about the multilingual for several of the regions where, they have multiple diverse
Right.
speakers. Like French Canada, obviously one that I've seen a couple people mention, oh, now I can have them both.
Yeah.
But that information usually doesn't get directly to us. Usually it winds up going through like the Asmodee sales team or stuff.
Fair,
But
fair.
I think yeah, hopefully that will be a nice little boon as well.
Yeah. So, sort of related to this is that we had a question just about the physical miniatures that people have now and sort of how that translates to the next phase of Legion. I think we saw sort of one a little bit sort of unexpected example of this when it came to the DC-15 heavy for the clone troopers, and we found out about the clone marksmen. And so for the crazy people like Mike and I who actually have enough DC-15s to be able to make a full squad out of just like our old phase one miniatures, is like we may squeeze an extra squad out of that, but I was curious as to whether you all can comment on to what extent it may like players may want to sort of be prepared for the minis that they already have needing to be used in a little bit of a different context. Like an example is that obviously there's a lot of presumption here again, just want to highlight that. But when we saw the preview for the Rebel Trooper list, is that just as we were talking about, it has the leader, seven regular minis, and then two heavy weapons, but they're different heavy weapons to what the original box was. And so it's been generating a lot of questions about like are their beloved Z6s going to go away and stuff like that. So I was curious about whether you were maybe going to be able to comment on that.
Yeah, so I will say that not everything in the previous line is going to necessarily make it over right away. But we've done all of the work to make sure that those things are very minimal. Some of that has been in discussion with our partners at LFL, just in terms of kind of, because one of the big things, right, is that we are re-releasing everything that was soft plastic and hard plastic. We're also repackaging everything from the previous line, as we've seen with the Geonosians,
Right.
into kind of the new Legion style with bigger squads or just the multilingual packaging, all that stuff. So everything there goes through the process again, right? It all goes through the review stuff. And obviously Star Wars is a much like the miniatures games themselves, is a living, breathing thing. It does have changes that happen to it, or evolutions of its story, or kind of where things are going and that kind of stuff. So there are some things that have shifted from when those things came out. But I do want to be clear, like people aren't going to see 50% of their previous Legion armies disappearing. And in every instance where those things might disappear, like the DC-15, for instance, for the clones,
Yeah.
we've made sure to say that The miniature can be used in another context. So, for example, your old clone DC-15s, they're fine to use in a marksman unit, right?
Sure.
Or to make a marksman unit. The big question there just comes down to, can the thing be identifiable in an easy way that doesn't cause game confusion, right? So we don't want, we don't want the DC-15X clone to be a B2 battle droid heavy. That would be weird. It wouldn't make any sense. I don't know. I'm picking like crazy stuff here.
Yeah.
There, like some of the things, right? For example, you mentioned the Rebel heavies. All those heavies will be available. There's some repackaging going on, right? Because the upgrade pack where some of those heavies were
Right.
was in soft plastic, so we're sculpting that into hard.
Yep.
We took the opportunity in those instances to say, okay, do the original assortment of heavy weapons make sense for where the game is? Are they providing a new player specifically the right kind of options and opportunity that we want a new player to have out of those boxes?
Sure.
So stormtroopers are different too. I think the stormtrooper unit has the HH-12 now in the standard unit, as you've seen in some of the previews for Ministrav. And the, I don't remember which one it is, T21, I think, moved,
One of the
DLT-20,
rifles.
one of the rifles that was in it. I can't remember which one specifically now has moved over to that new upgrade box that's going to come out. So yeah, like I would say, for the vast majority of players, it's going to be a very, very small percentage of things that won't immediately kind of transfer over. And again, talking about moving forward and all of that stuff, there's likely opportunities in the future that some of that those things will come back.
Sure.
But our goal is, we're hobbyists ourselves. We have shelves and shelves of painted miniatures behind our blurred backgrounds. And we get it, right? Like the last thing I ever want to do is say all of this time and effort you spent on your beautifully painted miniatures and your collection is that it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
So I think for the most part, very few people will be affected by anything like that. And the couple of instances where it happens, it'll be like a heavy weapon here, a heavy weapon there. There might be like one or two units that will wind up phasing out and then coming back later, but we've done everything we can to make sure that those can be utilized in other aspects of the game. And of course, you can always use them with a bit of hobby for whatever you want, provided that your opponent agrees with you, right? It's a hobby game. You should hobby it up to your heart's content, following some of the guidelines and everything to make sure the gameplay stays clear. So that's kind of I think the overall answer to your
Yeah,
question is that
that makes a lot of
guys not
sense.
following, but like any kind of big shift, there are a couple of things that will not have homes for a little bit. Or shift around, and we're going to do everything we can to make sure that that happens. Which reminds me of the thing that I was going to say when we were talking about the multilingual cards,
Okay, cool.
because this goes back to some shifts in the competitive play packets and rulings and stuff like that. So not only, are we pushing more towards the hobby and allowing players to do all their customization and stuff within those rules, and we're maintaining that and pushing that forward. We're also changing how cards are required for play,
Oh.
to allow players to not have to have printed physical copies like from the products, right? Because
Oh, thank God.
currently, or in the past, right, it was if
Mm-hmm.
you wanted to take six Stormtrooper units, you had to have six of the Stormtrooper unit card.
One
Moving
tiny caveat
forward,
here.
there's,
I think you do
you
still need
do.
the unit cards, but everything else you don't need because you got to
Well,
put
no.
stuff on the unit cards.
Because you have to have the official, you have to have an official version. So you have print
Sure.
play and you have the official printed card. And then as Pagani points
Cool.
out, with the upgrade cards, as long as you have an officially vetted list that says what's everything on there, there's differences there. So,
And there's a
the
call
point.
out for like the expend cards and that kind of stuff. You do have to have a copy of those for each one and that kind of stuff. But otherwise,
That
just
would matter
yeah.
a lot if you're
Have
like,
fun.
oh, I'm keeping the force pushing my head. Don't worry about it.
I promise
So,
you I didn't tap
yeah.
that HQ uplink last
So again, the whole point being is that the cards are a resource that are there to help players reference rules and to do all that
Sure.
stuff, but they're not the point of the game. The point of the game is to play with miniatures on a cool tabletop, and they do all these things based on the cards. So, we don't want players to feel like they're required to go pick up a card pack to get one extra version of a card, or to limit creativity and list building possibilities because they don't want to buy seven of this thing or that thing to be able to get all of the copies that they need, right? Now, again, as Pagani points out, we are being very careful to make sure that there's no unintended competitive advantages that can be gleaned from this system, right? Intentional or unintentional, because we do want play, just like with hobbying and converting and all of that stuff, right? We want there to be no confusion at the table as to what's going on. We want all of the open information to be open information to both players and all of that good stuff. We believe in our heart of hearts that 98% of everyone who ever plays a game at all times has the same goal in mind, right? And so again, it was one of those things where it's like, we're not a card company. We're a miniatures company. Miniatures are what's most important. The cards facilitate the miniature game. So let's make them a facilitation and allow players different ways to be able to access those as they need to. So that was what I was going to say, is that even if you needed different language versions, you wouldn't have to worry about it because you can obviously supplement with other means and ways. The print play being probably the primary one, but of course, if you want to do an old school, write out your army list, as long as you have official, one copy of the official card in some capacity, you're good to do that too, minus the expends and the other ones that have manipulation aspects that track throughout the game.
Well, I think I can speak for both Mike and myself is that you've helped cut down on like required prep time before a tournament by like maybe at least 15 minutes to not have to like go, oh, where's that RPS?
I have all my cards meticulously organized, so
Oh,
it's not
good
quite
for you.
15 minutes for
I
me,
do not.
but now I don't need to.
Yeah.
It's maybe the most important part.
Yeah. I think that's very player positive. Yeah, so Mike, I think we'll switch to you asking a couple questions about design philosophy.
Yeah, I think I want to jump into some of the tournament play stuff
Oh yeah,
first, if that's
sure.
okay. Just we're already talking about competitive stuff. This seems like a good jumping off point.
Yeah.
So I wanted to open with asking about the current state of advantages. Presently, there's about 10,000 recorded games in Longshanks under the new edition. Advanced Intel has a 60% win rate in competitive games, while all the other advantages are somewhere between like 50 and 37%, which has kind of led to the like turn zero of Legion right now being like, who's got advanced intel and who doesn't? Is that something you guys are like okay with? Is that like, is it okay for an advantage to be that powerful? Do you feel like that needs to be toned down or other things up? Like, what are you guys' general feelings on that?
Yeah, generally I think 60% is maybe a little high, but not egregiously so, in terms of win percentage. And personally, from a philosophy standpoint, I would much more look at bringing the other ones up rather than Advanced Intel down,
Yeah,
because
that's
I think
fair.
Advanced Intel is doing what we want it to do, right? It's a very powerful pick. It competes with the other options during the pre-game mini game. So I think that one, if anything, is functioning how we want advantages to function, and the other ones are not quite meeting their mark.
Okay.
As we talked about earlier, right? We did a lot of things, whole lot. So having a couple outliers, I think, is expected, but I'm not entirely certain that this is one of them. I think this is more kind of what we want.
And
Sure.
if those other ones were to be changed in some way that came up, it would eat out of that 60%.
Absolutely.
And then also there's obviously like releases in the future that you've talked about the idea that there's faction specific ones coming out. There's all sorts of room for cards that feel close to or maybe even more powerful than we currently think of advanced intel. And so yeah, I can see how that would shake out over time. I don't know if there's any other thoughts you have about that, Mike.
No, I think I think that's great to hear. I definitely
Yeah.
think that like I would love to see like Garrison and some of the other ones kind of like get popped up as opposed to Advanced Intel being toned down. Advanced Intel is strong, and it feels like advantages should feel strong, you know, when you there are things that you should want, right?
Yeah, there are things that you want or you should want, and it should be things that can compete with, say, the primary mission or the secondary mission for what you want to do in that pregame,
Yeah.
right? So, yeah, and I mean, maybe I'm going off reservation here a little bit, but mission cards, advantage cards, all these different things, like, we're not done. There's more coming, right?
Yeah,
Like,
yeah,
There's all sorts of stuff in the hopper coming in the future. So don't feel like we'll never be back with more of them. So
Makes sense.
It's awesome.
yeah. I mean, you mentioned that we've said that, we're working on faction specific advantage cards, other missions and things like that. Like right now, the intention and the plan going forward is to do at least one battle card pack per year,
Okay.
minimum,
Okay.
right? And as that field kind of gets filled out and starts to become interesting, if you pay attention to one of the announcements we just made for our other game, Crisis Protocol, right? We've gone into the system where we're building more and more missions into the game. And then for the competitive side, for the tournament side, right, there's now a selection of missions that are available per season,
Okay.
which means that there's a way to like
Oh, I like that a
more
lot,
tune
actually.
or focus different play styles,
Yeah,
to
yeah.
remove certain play styles, to offer challenges. Because at the end of the day, I think if you're engaged in tournament play and that's what you like to do, you like to test your skills, then obviously having a seasonal shift that forces you to ask different questions, that kind of moves the power levels of different things through what it says the objectives of the game are going to be, is exciting and fun and interesting. And I think it's healthy for games in that environment. And then that is separate from the standard game, which is just pick the cards you like, come in, do your pick ban, play the game, and have fun. Because we're going to make sure all those cards are balanced to the best of our ability in an imperfectly balanced game for normal play. But the second that you say, okay, I want to go to this different game mode, I want to go into tournaments, now we can start doing some different things that are outside the norm of the standard gameplay.
Yeah.
And it gives us a lot of interesting dials and levers to tweak in that environment to keep players on their toes, that are, that are different and appropriate to what players are hoping to engage in, I think. So that's the other thing, to throw
I
out
think
there.
a rotation like could be really healthy and positive for the game. I think that but before the shift to 2.6 was happening, we were talking about rotation like being a way to maybe mix things up with the old battle cards, because they were starting to feel a little bit stale. And I think that it seems to be working really well in Marvel Crisis, where you've been doing a rotation thing for a couple of years now. And so yeah, I would totally welcome that. That's cool.
Yeah, it's kind of a longer term plan, right? You need to build a foundation and then a
Yeah, yeah,
base of
yeah.
enough choices to make rotation meaningful. But
For
that's
sure.
definitely something we're driving towards with a lot of intention for Legion as well. And the just introducing more objectives, more missions, more ways to play is always more better, right? And they allow a lot of different play styles and different units that maybe don't have a place in the current system right now to shine. And you can tweak and build towards that as well as a player, or as a competitive packet creator. So
I
yeah,
think
don't worry, this is, as Pagani says, this is not the end.
no. I think it's also worth saying crystal clear, 100%. When we talk about rotation, we're talking about like missions and stuff, not miniatures.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah,
We're not like units or
understood.
anything
Yeah,
like that.
that was my
But
assumption.
yeah, but I know whenever anyone says rotation, like, well, but what about? I'm like, no.
Right,
I'm talking
they
about.
start thinking of collectible card games the way rotation works there, but with MCP, it's like tactics cards and objectives, but your minis are always available.
Sorry, Republic players, you can't play your clone infantry this
Yeah,
season.
that would be pretty tough.
It's gonna be
Budget cuts,
a hard
budget
season.
cuts. I
Yeah.
guess it's just Wookiee defenders for me this
Hey,
year.
hey, hey, hey.
You can take the new marksman. Come on,
That's
it's
fair.
fine.
That's fair.
That's
Yeah,
fair.
that's yeah.
But we've yet to see their unit card, though. I
That's
don't
true,
know.
but
I
you
don't
have no
know.
choice because I just got rid of infantry. So now what are you going to do? You only
Mike,
have one core option
Mike and I
again.
haven't even put that in a tier list yet. So how are we
Right?
gonna play that?
I'll play 501st where I only have to take one. I
There you
don't
go. There you go. There's
know.
always a way around it.
Yeah. So I guess on the topic of like additional objectives and stuff, one of the kind of stated objectives you guys had with 2.6 when it was originally coming out was like to reduce missions that were kind of decided before the game started. You guys mentioned that a lot when you were like watching back tape and stuff like that. The kind of current meta with like the competitive scene is that like higher activation lists are kind of taking advantage of like breakthrough and intercept signals by like kind of making smaller armies split up their lists in disadvantaged ways. Do you feel like that is like too far in that direction, or do you guys feel like that's okay?
I don't think I've seen anything that raises any particular red flags,
Okay.
right? One of the goals of these missions was to create situations where players can build their armies to be good at specific ones. We didn't want it to just be like an ultimate slam dunk, where it certainly existed in the previous, where you don't even have to deploy. With these ones, it is much more of a, if I deploy wrong or I deploy greedily or something like that, I can be punished for it. And that's more of, I think, where we're looking at for what we think is acceptable versus just like, oh, this is mostly a foregone conclusion before I've even put a miniature on the table. So whereas you can definitely force people into situations that are suboptimal for them and maybe even straight up bad for them, there is a way out, hopefully, right? Not to say there always is one, but there is a way out, and they can play to that out, and that's our hope, right?
I guess as a follow-up to that, one of the things about the old battle deck system that we had was like you guys instituted kind of like a four card flip as opposed to a three card flip, to kind of allow
Change.
more player agency, in the turn zero process. You know, or is it possible we might see something like that in the future? Because like right now, blue player kind of doesn't. There's like this awkward thing where you're like, I won the roll off, but I'm blue player, so I don't get to kind of like choose what the last thing that's banned is, and I have no idea what it could be. So it's kind of like very variable. And that's like very like it reminds me of like when we had the three card flip. Are you guys happy with how the new system has played out? Do you feel like you're gonna iterate on that at all?
I mean, everything's always up for iteration, right? Like, even
Sure.
if we're happy with something, we're always going to be looking for the better way to do it. So we're constantly reassessing. Are we happy with it at the moment? Yeah. I don't think there's any particular, like, as I said, giant red flags or anything where we're like, oh no, pull the brake. We got to go. Is it perfect? Nothing's ever perfect. There's always room for improvement, right? One of the big philosophies of our studio is we can always do better, never stop reaching. So that's certainly a situation here that I think we can always do better in the pregame, because I think the pregame is, I think personally, I feel like I've played so many different games, great. Pregame stuff, very unexplored territory, right? We like making our weird pregames, and I'm here for it.
Give me a Thrawn where you can just decide everything. You know, that's a
But you don't get to
special
know it yet because it's all face down
rule.
or something. But you get to pick
I don't
it.
know. Thrawn has his own cards. I mean, I think the other thing too, right, in terms of the blue player and everything, is that I don't know that we've really seen the exploration on asymmetric tables that we're hoping to see, right?
Oh,
Red,
that's really
blue,
interesting.
blue, red player should be a strong choice based on table side and advantage. It's something we talked a little bit about in Ministrav with everything going on there. And I know that a lot of stuff has, you know, for years and years and years, we've been kind of drilled into as a tournament organizer or just setting up your general tables for your standard games with your friends, make things kind of symmetrical, right? Make it balanced. Well, battlefields never are. And as Pagani said, we like to really push the edges of the turn zero stuff. And one of our hopes with this, and one of the reasons why you can, you know, make these choices like steel blue, is that choice of table side ideally becomes a meaningful choice and one that's really important, or at least is equally considered next to the primary, the secondary, and the advantage. So just like our conversation with the advantage cards and the choices there, that's something that we as a studio can't really control, right? Because table setup is always going to be left to the players. But I think it's a very interesting and exciting opportunity for players to be able to explore in their events and just in their games in general, in a way that still, well, maybe not fair in the traditional sense, can feel fair, because you can always be like, my army, I need that line of sight blocking terrain that's only on that one side. So I'm going to take it, right? Because it's more important to me than getting this advantage or getting the secondary. And, you know, and again, I hopefully we'll see some exploration of that and people start to explore that kind of stuff. I know just in general, the cover changes have been a lot to digest, and we've seen discussion and discourse among the different global groups about how much terrain is correct, where should you put your terrain. I think table setup and asymmetry is another one that hopefully we'll get to as well. But of course, if that never happens, as Pagani says, we can always adjust when things start to become a problem or things like that. But I do think talking about things that players haven't quite uncovered yet, that is one that we haven't seen. And I mean, there's a lot of legacy to that. But it is something that I think, as if I was running games as a TO or if I was doing that stuff, I would really be pushing my players to be like, hey, we should start to make these battlefields more interesting. We should make them asymmetric. And we should make that a real choice that has impact on the game because that's how war works, right? If you have the high ground, you have an advantage.
It's really interesting you say that because it just so happens that I was in a little bit of a Discord conversation with one of our patrons, actually said Drew Buchholz in Colorado, and he was talking about how we're probably just like you're saying is that we're thinking we're in that mind zone of tables need to be equal all the time in order to be like egalitarian to players, but that the reality that makes turn zero more interesting is one to where if you look at all the tables in a tournament, there's some to where I really don't care if I'm blue player because it's pretty equal. There's some to where I'm going to care a little bit and then it's going to be a real choice. And then you're going to have at least a few tables to where, oh my God, I really want blue player on that table. And as long as you're allocating the players in a truly random way, is that you can make that as close to fair as possible. But that's interesting because, like, at least I'm not huge into the TO scene myself, but I haven't really heard a lot of chatter about a philosophy like that. It's potentially something that organized play on the AMG side, would like obviously they can at least say these things, and it's up to TOs, like you said, about whether they're going to listen. But generally, I think that when AMG has spoken up about these things in the past, that TO has been pretty receptive. So yeah, I like that a lot, actually. It's tough to execute. It's not easy, but I can see that sort of being the ideal that you would aim for.
Train is the bane of every TO, right? I mean, you just had Hank on. I'm sure
It's
they
tough.
probably covered that a little bit, right? Like the amount that you need, the right amount, making sure, that it looks good on the tables and all of that. And so I think that, will we ever see quite the table side choice become as impactful to an event like an Adepticon or things like that? Maybe someday, but I do think that players, in their standard games, when you're playing with your collection of terrain or you're playing at the game store, you can start to flex that a bit more and just see how it feels and see how it impacts the game because it was included as a meaningful choice for that reason and that hope. And it was one of those things that, we talked about a lot internally, and it excited us at the idea that we could break away from this, here are your five table setups. Every table is one of these. Because it just leads to a less interesting game, and it doesn't challenge players like you really can. And what makes miniatures games amazing is that spatial awareness and placement matters, right? Distances matter, how things interact matter. And so, being able to really explore that was very exciting to us, and something that we hadn't really seen a lot in games. And we'd actually seen, I think, a lot of this is a bit legacy, but one of our frustrations from previous games we've played or places, competitive packs that we worked on, is that there was a push away from interesting table setups, right? That it made the game less fair. And that's not to say that wasn't entirely true, but I do think that that was kind of a response a little bit to trying to say, okay, well, how do we make that something that you can control that is interesting and that is a meaningful choice at turn zero?
Cool.
Awesome.
I kind of want to tie that back one moment, just back into the advantages that we talked about, right? Like, if we wanted perfect fairness and perfect symmetry between everyone, we wouldn't have any of this, right? We would be like, here's your mission, do your thing, go do that. And like, we want people to be fighting over these different options. And if that's recon or advanced intel, how do we kind of tell it's an upgrade? or board side or your mission or whatever, right? Like, those are things that you should be fighting over, and you should be trying to influence in the pregame to get the best option for you. And to be blunt, it shouldn't be fair, right? Like, I'll have played a game there to get to the point to play Legion. That's the point.
The challenge from the development side, right, is we talk about this a lot in different podcasts and development stuff, right? But the best word that to describe our approach is co-opetitive. These games are co-opetitive, which means that they're competitive. There is a winner and there's a loser, and the goal of the game or the point of the game is to win, right? The problem, if you want to call it a problem, is that these games can't be played by yourself. You have to have somebody who wants to play the game with you. And so you can love the game as much as you want, but if you have no opponents, you will never get to play the game because somebody has to play. Now, in regards to like a professional sport, you know, like the NFL or the MLB, you can have just crap teams that will never win. And you're just like, I'm not going to watch them because they're just going to get the snot kicked out of them. But those guys have to come to work every day. Like, they don't get the option to be like, this game is no fun anymore. I'm not going to show up. It's their job, right? Hobbies and miniatures games and like all the stuff that we do, it's what we do for fun. So if people aren't having fun, they're just not going to show up. So what we have to do is realize that the games are co-opetitive. What we want is we want players to believe that they have an even chance to come out on top. And what affects that chance is their skill, their luck, external situations, you know, outside of their control, how they adapt to those situations. So at the end of the day, right, we kind of talk about imperfect balance, but imperfect balance means that a player with higher skill should, all things considered, outside of these other factors, right, come out on top. And a player with higher skill should be able to take less efficient things and still come out on top of a player who has more efficient things based on the disparity in skill. So if you're close, right, the min-max matters. But if your skill levels are highly discrepant, then the min-max won't matter because the higher skill will come through. And that goes back to like all of this stuff, right? So Pagani talks about how we want you to win that mini game. That mini game is giving you a percentage advantage in that if we say we started a base 50, we both come to the table, we both believe we can win. By the end of that turn zero, like mini game of picking the advantages and the table side and all of this stuff, one person should feel like they have a slight advantage over the other person, right? And now it's up to that other person to use their skill to close the gap and maybe a little bit of luck, right? The Rebels didn't win because they had better pilots. They won because they got lucky, right? It was a one in a million shot.
They had more dodge tokens.
That's how they beat the Death Star, you know?
Yeah.
So luck is absolutely a crucial part of the game. You can't win without luck, but luck shouldn't be the primary way. It's just an important bit to it. And so that all kind of comes back together, right? Like, we don't want the game to be perfectly balanced and fair because then you wind up with maybe checkers. You could argue chess, but there's still, you know, there's still a distinct advantage to being white.
Knight OP.
Yeah.
I
We're
play white all the time, and I can't win any
all the
games
time,
of chess
all the time.
anyways, so
So yeah, so it's there, it's this really weird tension of the game should be balanced, but the game is inherently not balanced because there are too many circumstances, even outside of the way the units function differently and how they all have these different keywords, how the player uses them, what the table looks like, how the dice roll, you know, what the weather is in Alabama on a Tuesday. It can all matter in different ways. Yeah, think about that one, Pagani. I need you to start controlling the weather in Alabama.
I mean, if the wind gets you, what do you do, right?
Exactly, right? So again, I think the idea that you're going to end this turn zero mini game, or you're even going to list build and wind up in a situation where you're flat even is just untrue, right? That turn zero has an impact. It's our goal and our role as game developers and designers to make sure that impact is still within the bounds of player skill to overcome. And then that's what makes the game fun. That's what makes you want to come back. Right? You say, oh, I lost, but I can see what I did wrong. I can improve on that. I can make this tweak here. If this dice roll had gone a little different, I could have done this, right? That's the drug that makes us all come back to these games over and over again, right? It is a, just like with the hobby, just like when I talk about painting or you know, modeling miniatures and converting and stuff, it's the improvement of one skill. It's the journey, not the destination that matters. It's the fact that you get to constantly see yourself improve and understand how you can improve. And at any point in that journey, you can be like, I'm done. I've reached where I wanted to be. Or you can say, I want more. And you can do what Pagani did and become a full-time miniatures game player and go win a bunch of worlds everywhere or join the Magic Pro Circuit or whatever your thing is, right? There's infinite potential in these games, and you get to see it as a hobby and something that is enjoyable. So
Sounds like we might
That's
need
all
to
that.
have Pagani back on a podcast just to sort of like brag about his achievements, like we're in a beer hall in Valhalla sometime.
Yeah.
No, don't do it. Don't talk
Write
about
it down. Set it in stone.
Yeah, I've already written it down, so sorry. That'll be up to your bosses about what they tell you to do it. Mike, do you have another question about the competitive scene before we switched back over?
I think we're good to swap back over to some other stuff.
Okay, cool. All right, so I have just like a couple questions that are sort of about like player experience in the game. So if it pleases the wills, I'd like to talk about dudes with rocket launchers for a second. So this is basically a little bit focused on one specific keyword, which is cumbersome. Is that the way we deploy? I personally prefer the way we deploy now. Is that it adds this sort of interesting angle to the game that wasn't there before. For the record, I very much prefer it. However, is that there is this one keyword to where all of the factions, except for Rebels, weirdly enough, have core heavy weapons that have this keyword cumbersome on them, that basically makes it so that if you're putting dudes with rocket launchers in your army, then they can't use it on the first round. The first round, if like in most games, should be 20% of the game. Sometimes if you don't get all the way past round four, it'll actually be a quarter of the game. And so from a player experience perspective, and I'm being subjective and speaking for myself here, I just want to be clear about that, is that it can feel kind of limiting, and that like you don't get to play with your toys. And so I was just curious about like, is the way that cumbersome works now, is it an intentional sort of balancing choice to protect vehicles a little bit, or maybe is it something that is going to be changed in the future? I'm just curious what your guys' thoughts are.
Yeah, I think the current function of cumbersome is a holdover from previous, right? I don't think there was any intentional design that says, hey, we don't really want these things showing up on the table and blasting a vehicle or anything on turn one.
Okay.
That being said, maybe that works out that way, right? Like if you deploy your vehicle early and then it gets five rebel troopers with missile launchers show up. Don't think they get missile launchers. Whatever. They do
That was the
now or
one that
something,
doesn't have one,
whatever.
Will.
But yeah, like if that happens, that doesn't sound great either.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's certainly something to think about. I don't remember any specific conversations about that, Shake. Do you remember any specific conversations?
I mean, I remember talking a lot about cumbersome and how it was like a poopy rule because it stopped you from doing stuff, right?
The
And
technical term for the
yeah,
record.
it's not the technical term, but
Yeah.
we're in public company, so I can't use the real
Oh.
definitive term.
Gotcha.
And I think there are a couple of options, right? If you can take a prepared positions upgrade or the advantage, right? You can come around and have the unit on the table, right? That's the advantage of having prepared positions. You don't have to move on. Now your cumbersome weapon can shoot. But not everyone has access to that. And I think, like Pagani said, and going back to kind of probably the through line of everything, is that we changed a lot of stuff. Right. We
Yeah, of course.
effectively are moving into kind of a whole new edition of the game. I know I said it. The
You heard it
goal
here first,
was,
he said it,
right?
Mike.
We're not quite there yet. And as mentioned, the important thing is that the thing that we don't want to do is you say addition's a dirty word these days, right? Because addition means how much of my stuff is no longer good. In fact, we even asked that question and discussed it earlier. And again, talking about, how information travels, who hears what, all of this stuff, though, just the term, it's like yelling fire in a crowded theater. New edition. And then everyone panics, right? Yeah. And we've all been there. We all know it. We've been trained to be afraid of that word. One of the things that we're really trying to do that we've done with the other games that we're doing here with this Legion rollover is we're trying to get to a place where these games are actually living and evolving things, and we don't have to reset the entire board just to move into positive change, right? And I think there's a lot of good legacy in Legion for that, the points adjustment, some of the rebalancing, right? We've tried to build on that, but we've hit a point to where like bigger, more structural changes we felt required to take the game into the modernity in the next 5 to 10 years. So we still wanted to not go crazy, because the goal is to create a firm and stable foundation that we can adjust from. And cumbersome was one of those things where we did talk about it, and we're like, yeah, but we don't want to change too much, and it's not hurting anything, and maybe removing it will have unintended consequences that we don't quite have time to check because we're checking all these other things. So let's just go ahead and kind of leave it for the moment. So everything Pagani said is largely true. There's just a little more context around the discussion, because we had a entire, like, one of those gigantic super wall conference room whiteboards that was just filled to the brim with all the things that we thought about changing and what we could do. And then, the one of the processes was going through and saying, okay, but what's actually healthy and good for the game versus what's just change for change sakes? What is making the game not the game, right? I mean, the common mantra that's written on the board in general, but especially during the 3 years of Legion work that we did to get to this point, was, we're not trying to make the best game in the world. We're trying to make the best Legion that ever was. And that's an important difference, right? Because sometimes, if you've ever been in a relationship, you love your partner because just as much because of their flaws as you do because of their good attributes.
Yeah, I'd
And I
say that's
think that is
accurate.
absolutely true of games as well, right? I can think of a lot of games that I've loved playing over the years where I've been like, this rule is absolutely terrible, but it makes the game
Sure.
experience something special, right? Maybe cumbersome is one of those things. I don't know. We haven't quite gotten there yet. But I do
I
think,
don't think so.
yeah, probably not. You're probably right. You're probably right.
Probably not.
It sounds like compared to something like you changed armor around to where like armor always has a number, and that feels right. It feels fine, and it feels like it's sort of settled law, so to speak. It sounds like cumbersome isn't in that sort of settled law territory at this point.
I think
No.
for a small peek behind the curtain, right? There you have we have 2.5, 3 years, I'm not whatever Schick says, for how long we have to do all this, right? And at the end of the day, there's a deadline. We
Yeah, of
have to
course.
finish, right? We can't keep going until it's perfect and everything is addressed and everything is flawless, right? We have a deadline. We have to hit that deadline. So there are things that don't maybe get as much attention as they, I'm not gonna say should have, because I don't think they should have, but could have perhaps if we didn't have that deadline to get there. And
To me, it sounds like you guys basically feel the same way about it as many of the players do, and that I do. So, like, I feel pretty good at least knowing that at the very least.
I want to see the one person just like come out of the woodwork and be like,
No, I love not shooting my rocket launcher.
be like, tell me about this. Tell me why. Right? Explain, please. So.
Sort of along a similar lines is that I feel like one of the keywords that was maybe in a more central way, sort of like caught in the transition, was secret mission. Is that at the very least, like when you compare it with bounty, is that bounty is straightforward enough. It's and like you're shooting at each other anyway, you're trying to punch each other. And so if bounty like happens and it ends up being a bonus, then somebody using Bossk or Boba Fett can be like, great, cool, got a bounty and add it to my list and see if I can add it to 12. But with secret mission, like it means that you need to have a game plan, at least in my opinion, to like make it work. In Padme's case specifically, you actually have to play a command round one that forces one order onto her. She doesn't have authoritative anymore. So if you have an Anakin in your list, then he may just be out there going like, hey, I just wanted to make sure my wife can get in there in the end zone. Please don't shoot at me. I think that when I look at Secret Mission, I see something that is sort of like caught in the transition a little bit. And I think that it has room to grow as far as being like a strategy that feels a little bit more like neatly packaged. And it's possible that many of us just don't have big enough imaginations and that we're sort of thinking about it the wrong way. I will freely admit to that being a possibility, but I'm just curious what do you guys think about that one too? Because that was another standout keyword to me.
Well, so previous incarnation of Secret Edition, Secret Mission, I think was pretty wild, right? Like scoring an extra victory point in pre-2.6 was a lot.
In a
Some
game with a
games
lot of ties, yeah.
some
By
games
wild,
had
he means incredibly game warpy, is what he
I mean,
means.
like there were some games that had like literally zero other control, like VP scored, right? Sometimes
You're
you had
not
one
wrong. Is
or
that
stuff,
depending on
right?
the primary, it could have meant everything for that
Yeah.
game.
Yeah, right. Like it's so I think maybe it's paying a little bit for its sins of the past, but I think generally speaking, we don't really want any of these keywords that score victory points to be like the way to win the game, right?
Yeah.
So if you can do something to score a point or score 2 points or something in a secret mission, like that's great.
Sure.
Cool. A mini game that you can play. We don't want it to be the primary focus of an army or anything like that. That being said, is there ways that we can improve secret mission? I'm sure there are. Yeah.
I think,
Everything can always get better, right? Like
yeah.
Well, and one of the really exciting things from a development standpoint about Legion is the fact that it uses keywords. So what does secret mission mean? Well, it means what the rule book says secret mission means right now.
yeah.
But at any point, someone can just go in there and rewrite the whole rules for secret mission, and now it means that, right?
Interesting.
And it
Which
doesn't
is one of the reasons
require
why reminder text is not there anymore, by the way.
one of the
Can
reasons,
make those.
word count and fitting on the cards for multilingual, all that
Good
stuff is
change,
not
by
there.
the way, because that actually caused more problems than it solved, in my opinion, at
That
least in a
was,
tournament setting.
I know people have different opinions on that, which is totally cool. That was kind of our takeaway as well, right? And I think we had a unique introduction to that because when we were handed over stewardship of Legion, we had a lot of games to play and to learn.
Yeah.
And it definitely caught all of us where we were like, oh, this is what the rule is. And then somebody would be like, no, that's not what the rule does at all.
Yeah.
You're like, but it says that. And they're like, yeah, that's just some like casual text that kind of tells you what it does. But you have to actually go read it. And we're like, why is this here at all? Right. So I think we had a very negative initial experience with that because we were coming into a game that was, 4 years old at that time.
And who knew that
And
plotting was going
everything
to show
else.
back up on with Dark Troopers when it was ceremoniously ejected from the eWeb that it first appeared to
So,
us?
and I do think this goes back to the fact that, like, as we look at Secret Mission
Yeah.
and we get to that point, it is one of those things where we can make adjustments and it doesn't invalidate cards, it doesn't do that stuff. And that's pretty exciting from a development standpoint, because one of the biggest challenges that we have and one of the biggest arguments that Pagani and I typically get involved in, especially with our little children, the devs watching, and then they kind of stare into their plates and they're like, mommy and daddy are fighting, is we're in this really interesting and exciting transitional world where in the past a game came out, an edition came out, it was printed in books, and it couldn't change from there. You might have some FAQ and you might have some general errata if something was just non-functional.
Yeah.
But a rebalance, a correction, an adjustment, that didn't happen, right? You got that in 6 to 7 years when the new edition came out. Maybe your army will be good then, right? Maybe this unit you like will be better then, or maybe it won't exist at all, right?
Yeah.
Again, saying the word edition is like yelling fire in a crowded theater. So we're in, but as things have evolved, as the internet and technology and communication and updates, like we're seeing this weird transition where print is still really important because we're tactile people, right? Tabletop gamers, we're playing with tactile things. We want cards, we want this stuff. But at the same time, we also want the best game that we possibly can have. And we want to see the game continue to grow and evolve and get better. And so the keyword system in Legion is a great one because it really allows that flexibility without invalidating print. Whereas other games that have all the rules on the card, it's not as
Yeah.
clean. And great power must also come great responsibility. I'm going to mix my genres here, but this is where the fight comes in, is like,
It's all
should we
Disney, it's
change it?
fine.
Should we wait? Is this important to throw in? Is it not? And I think you see this as an industry overall. If you're engaged in miniatures gaming in general, this is the struggle. Is it Should changes happen every month? Should they happen every 3 months? Should they happen once an edition, twice an edition, never? What's going on with that? And there's that challenge of, I think most tabletop players play video games, right? So we're all involved in electronic games. And when a game studio does a patch, you open the game, it says download patch, and you say fine. And then it downloads. And then all of a sudden, the game has just adjusted to the new way. You
Yeah.
might have to relearn some of the ways you approach the game, but you don't have to relearn the new rules. You don't have to know like what the priority system is, yada yada yada, right? Because the game program does all that. Well, this is our game program, right? It's our brain. We are the processor that makes tabletop games function. And so if we're giving you updates that change the game rules and parameters every month, like, I don't think a lot of people really can do that, right? I know I can't. Like, the number of playtesting things and everything, like, we screw things up all the time because we have 12 different versions of something in our head. We get paid to do it. We can't even like function properly. So,
And even if you
it,
could, it probably wouldn't be fun to
right.
have to make those adjustments all the time.
A
So,
lot, right? So we're definitely in this point where it's like, yeah, we want to really capitalize on this new wave of how games can be living and breathing organisms more so than they were in the past. And it doesn't require an addition to do that. And you can continually make the game better and better and better. But where's the limit? And when is too much and all of this stuff? So it comes down to like, why don't you make, sometimes we make changes too fast for one person and not fast enough for another. It's very subjective, and we're trying to navigate that as best we can, but always with an eye to, the goal is that someday we'll ride off into the sunset and we will hand over our games to somebody else.
Well, Mike, so we're gonna go over what happened right here, and I just need you to sort of nod along and verify that this is in fact a true story of what's going on and why it's just us talking now. Is that we got done with the interview. That was the very end of it right there, a totally planned end of it. And they told us, like, oh my gosh, it is so fun to be on the Notorious Scoundrels. Can you please, please, please bring us back next week? And we chat with each other, and we were like, okay, I guess we will. That's how it went down, right, Mike?
Now, what went down was Will Schick just like slammed the door and said, "I'll see you in hell," and
Wow,
left.
we had very different reads in that situation. No, to be truthful to the audience is that what went down were trees into power lines. It was actually first into Will Schick's area, and then into Will Pagani's area, and then like 12 hours later, my power went out, like because it was like a west to east thing. But they both of them were gracious enough, and like I'm being very serious here when I say that is that they said that they were willing to come back to basically go over the questions we didn't get to hit, and then also maybe see if we had a few more. So first of all, I have to say thank you very much to both of the Wills for being there, but then also like going the extra mile and being willing to come back and actually spend more time with us. That is very cool of them. And
Particularly when we were pretty close to maxing out our time as it was.
the well, don't tell them
Don't
that,
say
Mike.
anybody.
So yeah, like even though this is being split into two parts, is that it's actually going to mean that we get a little bit extra interview time. So again, thank you very much to the Wills and to Atomic Mass for donating that time. And then, as fate would have it, Mike, is that some news came out today on top of that, right?
Yeah, Gamma was today, which is I believe, I don't know what the acronym actually stands for, but it's a trade show for game stores, as I understand it. And it's our first look at the new core sets.
It's normally we would have like a half hour segment where we would make all sorts of theories about what's the deal with these core sets and what's the deal with recon missions, which is something that popped up on the back of this core set. Maybe like theorizing about like peering into the screenshots to see who are the what are the units that are going to be on these core sets. But as fate would have it, is that since we're going to have the Wills back next week, is that we'll see if maybe they are cool with answering some of those questions. We'll sort of see how things go as far as that goes. They have to keep some secrets for Adepticon, but I figure that rather than using your valuable listening time of us theorizing, is that we'll just ask them, and then we can find out more then. But I do think that it's worth at least very quickly going over just like some of the what we considered the sort of the highlights of maybe potentially a little bit newsworthy things that were said during this interview. So Mike, why don't you get started with like one of the we're going to go over two things each basically of what struck us the most.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I don't think we've heard before, which was really fantastic. I think the one that stuck out to me and Will kind of Schick kind of went straight to bat at it was the conversation about super squads. And the thing that I found surprising about that was the conversation about them being conservative with their power level, kind of introducing them into the game. We've seen a lot of units that commandos, aqua droids, dark troopers, these all came hot off the press, really, really good. And I think fairly, I assumed that when the super squads were all released, that the intention was for them to be, really, really good off the gate. But I found it interesting their take on that, and I think that was very A, refreshing to hear, and B, interesting to see where that could end up going.
Yeah, and then like I said on there is that I think that if their aim was to have have the average maybe a little bit below what could have been possible in order to make sure that it didn't veer off too far in one direction, in the like too good direction is probably the most important thing, is that I think that they actually succeeded at that. And I'm totally with you, is that the like you said, Dark Troopers, Commandos, Aqua Droids, those units did not come out conservatively. Riot Control, maybe that did come out a little bit more conservatively,
For
some
sure,
might
for
say.
sure.
But like at least with those, is that you're talking about one unit versus like this whole super squad concept, where at least off the bat, they have sort of this shared element of cohesion at range one, rolling red dice for suppression. And then otherwise just sort of absorbing all of the elements of the standard unit, is that I think given the fact that there were so many units that changed in order to like all of a sudden have these super squads, and that the math is different on some of them. Like you compare Ewoks to B1s to the Snow Troopers, that they're all adding a different number of minis to the squad. So it is interesting, and I think sort of piggybacking on that is that it's making me wonder, like, what is that super squad that sat on the shelf for 2 years?
I listened to it back today.
Okay, yeah.
Schick said something to the effect of they were talking about how when they were originally testing the super squads, and this one in particular, they were still using the old cover rules, and that this super squad just like deleted things even though it looked like it shouldn't.
Did they say 14 black dice, if I remember right?
I think there's a white dice,
White dice,
and
okay,
I
yeah.
think as I kind of like, I think it's Mud Troopers. The more I listen to it, I think it's Mud Troopers. It's just like I don't know what unit is supposed to be like really crappy, like that we don't have yet.
Yeah.
I think it,
I could see Mud Troopers throwing like two non-surging white dice, like, and then I'm assuming costing at least a little bit more than a B1, if they were throwing that many out there. But it is an interesting thought. Is like I get the other thought that I had. I was thinking about what are the Star Wars things that tend to, like, A, come in big groups, and B, not being well known for like being super good at their jobs. Is that I agree, Mud Troopers make sense, and the other thing that makes sense is gulp. I'm going to say the G word is Gungans.
If it's the thing is, I'm not sure Gungans are actually bad at their job. That was why I was swayed for Mud
That's
Troopers.
fair.
With Jar Jar being the exception, right?
Yeah,
Like he's supposed to be dumb and
maybe I
stupid
have a
and like
Jar Jar
whatever.
centric view of the Gungan military, and that's really on me, and that I need to do some
You are stereotyping whole people by
yeah,
one
it's
person's
true. I
actions.
may need to do a little bit of self-reflection about that actually, but yeah, as the other thing, just like from a sort of a logistics standpoint, is that it would have felt a little bit weird to me if they had kept a Gungan unit on the shelf, which would have maybe also meant that they also would have kept like a Jar Jar and Boss Nass and the Kadu riders, and like all the other stuff that you would think would come out with sort of the standard Gungan core unit.
Yeah, I feel like if you're gonna take the like we're gonna do a like Episode One, Phantom Menace, Battle Force, or
They would do it
something.
the Ewok way,
They
I
would,
would think.
yeah, like we would get Qui-Gon and we'd probably get like a new
Oh man.
Padme, you know,
Don't.
like I'm just like, if it were me, that's what
Oh
I would
yeah, I hear you, but oh man,
do.
like the idea of having Qui-Gon on the table is just too awesome for me to even think about. You know, because people always wag their fingers, like, well, he wasn't a part of the Grand Army of the Republic. And to which I can only say, shut up. I just want Qui-Gon in the game.
I mean, I don't think it's that far-fetched to have like a Naboo battle force that where you can like take Gungans and like Naboo Royal
Yeah, they can
Guard
have the
and
Royal
like
Guard exactly.
and what's his name, Corporal or Sergeant Panaka, Captain Panaka.
Captain Panaka,
I'm using every rank other than the one he
yeah.
has. You know, I and like Qui-Gon could easily go in that, you know,
Yeah.
we could get a young like apprentice
Oh,
Obi-Wan,
can you
you
imagine?
know.
Like, oh yeah, I would be so down with that. But yeah, I think you're right, is that it makes more sense for them to have sort of a Phantom Menace wave. At least
Yeah.
it makes more sense to
If
me. So
you're gonna do that, I think that that's what makes sense for sure.
But yeah, what else sort of leapt out at you from the interview?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things kind of going back to Super Squads was that in the new boxes, like we're not going to get all the weapon options for the core troopers, you know. I do think that they soft implied that there's going to be some way to acquire at least some of the heavy weapons that currently exist that won't be in those packs, which suggests that there's still going to be like specialist packs or personnel packs or something, some sort of add-on, which I think is fine. I definitely think, I mean, right now, obviously we're getting new core sets as we've, you know, kind of seen the preview today, but a lot of the good heavy weapon options currently are in like those specialist packs right now. And I do think it's good that they're like, we're changing up what's in the base box, you know. I think they were suggesting that stormtroopers are going to have T21s. I know that they're like, it's a rifle, we don't remember what it was. I'm like almost positive it's going to be the T21.
I think, well, and you would probably be able to tell just by looking at the previewed minis also. If I remember right, I think an HA-12 and a T-21 were the models that they showed. Because the T-21 has like the big old barrel at the end, but
It's the iconic like stormtrooper weapon from A New Hope, right? It's like that's what they have on Tatooine, and they're like walking around with.
I think it's it was a mix of that and the DLTs, because it was my understanding, or at least like what I'm assuming, is that they went to like a World War II replica collector, or like a collector of the actual guns, and they were just like, you know, can we just borrow these? We're gonna just like sort of weld some other crap on there, and then we're gonna call it a blaster. I mean, it ended up being pretty neat and iconic, but. But yeah, is that I think it's good that they rethought the weapons that make the most sense to include in there. I think that the T-21 is maybe like a more meaningful all-rounder than the DLT, and then you have like the HH-12 as sort of the anti like the true anti-armor one. And then connected with that is that hopefully based on what they said in the interview and. You know, Will Pagani was not shy about sharing his opinion of the cumbersome keyword is that those of us who maybe want to be able to play around a little bit more with the shoulder-mounted rocket launchers that the various core can take is that it may not always be the case, question mark, that it's going to be so rough with the way we deploy. So that was you know pretty hopeful for me is that. Obviously, it's such a tiny corner of the game that I felt a little bit bad even asking about it. But it's something that,
It's
and
also very
especially,
relevant with the ARF troopers.
yeah, the ARF Troopers just came out, and so it does feel very relevant for that. But and then Secret Mission 2 is that one, it seemed like their opinion on sort of the way it's going now. It's got some more layers to it just because it involves so much more than something like cumbersome. But it, you know, the part of the announcement today was that there's going to be like entire packs that are just devoted to command cards. And so One can hope that even if we already know what R2 and Padme's new unit cards are, is that maybe their new command cards are going to give them the boost that they need to actually make a secret mission a little bit more doable. But I do agree with what Pagani said about that also, is that it's not good for the game if like secret mission is truly a win condition in and of itself, which it weirdly was right after R2 came out. And
I
then
feel so targeted by all these changes, Evan. It's like, you know what? You played Yoda, nerf him. You played Secret Mission, nerf it. You played Padme, nerf her too.
it's all about you, Mike.
You played Anakin, nerf it. You play ARCs, nerf it. You play Commandos, nerf it.
But maybe it's actually saying something about what are the units that Mike Berry gravitates towards is the ones that are so busted that they need to get nerfed right off the bat.
All I'm saying is that nobody thought Yoda was busted until things started happening. That's all I got to
Well,
say.
we may still get a chance to ask a Yoda relevant question when we bring them back. That was one of the ones that was sort of left on the burner. And then I think that really, as far as I can tell, the other big thing just to talk about briefly was what they said about what is they said about terrain. I thought it was really interesting. I think that that's the sort of thing to where I guarantee you we're gonna have a whole. I'm gonna channel the great Dorn Bos here. Is that we're gonna have a whole podcast about that one?
Maybe several.
yeah, maybe more than one. But in the meantime, I think it'll be interesting to see how the conversation amongst the TOs, which is basically there's always a conversation ongoing. There's actually like a TO Discord basically. Like between them and then potentially with AMGOP, it's going to be up to them in terms of what extent they want to be prescriptive, so to speak, about like the way terrain goes. But I think that hearing it from the Wills themselves about what their vision is about how terrain is supposed to work is that I will freely admit is that I had been sort of in this mental zone of thinking that terrain should be equal in order for a player to not get shortchanged, but that may actually still be a bit of legacy hanging around in my brain because when the game was so much about range five, is that it sure did matter all the time, and it could feel really bad if you were getting, if your butt was getting sniped off and there was like literally nothing you could do about it against like a Yoda list or a BX list or anything like that. So yeah, I don't know if there's anything else you were thinking about the terrain piece, Mike.
I think it's that is a very complicated nut that is gonna have to be cracked, I think, at some point. I have so many thoughts, I'm not even sure it's worth saying anything at this
That's
point.
fair. That's fair. Like we said, there's going to be a whole thing about it.
yeah, I think I don't I'm not sure if it's good or a bad thing. I'm not sure how I feel about it yet.
Yeah,
It
that's fair.
definitely is a change of pace. I definitely am in the we're playing StarCraft sort of like mentality where like maps should be pretty equal and balanced, and like you shouldn't board edge shouldn't matter a ton. Like obviously even with competitive boards now that are generally we've gone to measures to try and make them as fair as possible, there's still generally a slightly better board side a lot of the time.
Yeah, there's usually a slightly better side for sure. So I don't know, it's going to be hard to figure out like what is the true ideal. Is the true ideal where like a side of the board is 20% better? How do you define that? Yeah, there's a lot, and I think it's going to be a very slow, very gradual evolution in terms of our understanding on it. And this probably, to be honest, not going to be one that to where I feel like it's not really even worth having it a ton until we actually see what all of the updated cards do.
Oh, 100%.
Because
Particularly with like new
goodness.
battle cards and stuff like that, it's tough to say what's fair, like
For sure.
until we know what the missions are,
So I think that we're gonna have Adepticon Worlds is that like the terrain is gonna be what it's gonna be there. I know that Hank works like very closely with AMG to get that right. So we may see some of their influence there. Like, we won't know until we get there. But until then, it's sort of a neat thing to think about the way the game could go in the future. My very first short version is that I like the idea. It's just that it does seem kind of hard to execute, and that is where the fun begins, so to
It
speak.
definitely is one of those things where, like, in a world where we could actually control every variable, that would be a perfect thing to do. I just like terrain has definitely been one of those things where it feels very difficult to actually control outside of just one tournament, you know. I will say just very briefly, because I know that we were only going to pick a couple things to talk about, but that kind of riled my brainwaves about something that may have been the biggest thing they talked about the whole time, which was that there's going to be enough battle cards that we're going to be able to have seasons, basically.
Oh yeah, that's right. Gosh, there was so much in this interview.
yeah, there's a lot, frankly. And I've only listened back once at this point. But yeah, I mean, like, that suggests to me that we're at a minimum getting 50% more of probably what we already have, and probably double every. It suggested to me that we're probably going to get like 6, 6, and 6 at a minimum every year.
I could see that. I could see that. And then, once we get our first actual pack of six each, for instance, is that maybe they would potentially like rotate out maybe three of the previous. It's like you would end up in a situation where there's nine options per. I think that has generally worked well in Marvel Crisis, as we talked about on the interview. Is that because it doesn't affect the core units that you can use, is that you can always use any number of the characters that you've bought for MCP. And so it's not limiting player choice in terms of who you take, but the various rotations out it can certainly affect the power levels of the various characters depending on what cards are allowed in MCP. All of the characters with healing factor had access to a card that basically would re it was basically Katarn armor for characters with healing factor. And then when they took that away, all of a sudden the healing factor characters were had significantly less value. So
Sure.
as you might
Yeah.
imagine, because Katarn armor effect is pretty darn good,
That's pretty good.
and so yeah, like it does create a lot of potentially interesting situations, and I'll just say I'm a fan of it.
Definitely would want to see the battle cards ASAP pronto. I assume we'll see at least some of them at Adepticon.
Okay. Well, I think that's enough of the Mike and Evan show. I know that people probably clicked on this to hear everybody else, but that is the good news, is that you're gonna hear even more Will talk in next week's episode. Which will be coming out probably like a little bit later next week, just because we had to figure out the recording dates a little bit. But I hope that you enjoy this one for now, and I think we can land the plane for this one at this point.
Sweet. This has been the Notorious Scoundrels, Season 4, Episode 5. I'm Mike.
I'm Evan.
Stay fresh, cheese bags.